The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Well, happy 4th of July, Independence Day week. I'm excited to have this day come. It's my favorite holiday, as represented by my huge turnout at my house. And what I'm now learning is one of the very few opportunities to see a great fireworks show. So, again, I've joked with Glass yesterday that if you are on the, it's really not a joke, if you're on the south side of Bloomington, about a mile from the lake, from the point, and you see some things booming for about 15 minutes, yes, we are the guilty parties. But since it's become legal in Indiana to let your legal fireworks off, then we do it with pride and patriotism. So looking forward to that. We're going to have a good one today, folks. I promise to try to keep it on track and not run over too much, although we do have Rod coming on as we wrap up quarter number two and where we find ourselves sitting today. I've had Rod on a lot this year, obviously, with the markets being in such turmoil. But as I read the tidbits of the week, the news of the week, I said this a few weeks ago, sometimes you just need to widen your lens out. Because the S&P has suffered two bear markets since the beginning of the pandemic back in March of 2020, right? So we had, that's 30 months. But the S&P's actually gained 20.4% from the close of trading on the 19th of February, that's the peak of stocks before the first bear market began, through last Friday, 8 days after the second bear bottomed. So widen your lens, folks. I know it's a little heart-wrenching and gut-wrenching to see your statements, but as many people have pointed out to me, they just aren't looking. They know it's not going to be good, so they just decided not to look. And some have looked and said, wow, maybe it's better than I thought it was going to be. So that's an interesting take on it as well. But there's something to this, right? The top 1% of American households actually own nearly 54% of all equities in the United States. The bottom 50% of income households own just 0.6% of equities. Now, what's interesting is that group of people are also responsible for driving economic activity, because they still have to go to the grocery store. They're still, you know, doing things to drive spending, which spending is what drives 70% of our economy. So I've always argued that even if you don't have any money in the stock market, hearing all of the bad stuff will affect your psyche and will affect what you spend money on. Now, some folks, you know, that don't have a lot of money, they're going to say, well, just because gasoline's $5 a gallon, I can't go do this and this now, which I would have done before, which that's, you know, part of the cycle that we go through. You know, inflation, it's been up. It was a little bit better this last report. Rod will talk about that. But it's interesting to look back when we were in this boat before. What did the Fed do then? Well, inflation was up 13.3% in 1979, and then again 12.5% in 1980. But the federal funds rate at the beginning of June of 1980 was 8.5%. And it was increased by the Fed up to 20%. Can you imagine that? 20% in just 6 months to try to bring inflation under control. So to put that in perspective, inflation was up 7% in 2021, and the Fed's fund rate is at 1.75% today after, yes, three Fed hikes already in 2022. My dad was in lending at the time at Workingman's Federal Savings and Loan. We well documented this in our holiday Christmas show. And, you know, in 1978-79, when the rates were so high, I mean, it really put a damper on real estate. And guess what's happening now with rates only in the 5 range, maybe less than that, for 30-year fixed mortgages, already putting a damper on things. So we've been raising rates, right? But we're all in the same boat. There's 45 nations globally that consider have central banks that have raised interest rates in an effort to bring down spending demand. That's the purpose of it, to bring down spending demand of customers and consumers in their relative countries. So everyone's in the same boat right now. In fact, Fed chairperson Loretta Mester, she's out of Cleveland, she's a voting member of the Fed, said recently in an interview that she thought it would take a couple of years for domestic inflation to drop down to the Fed's 2% annual target rate. And we've said this before, but the Fed did say, starting all of this, that they were going to let inflation try to run a little hot for a while to make up for lost time. I don't think they realized they were going to have a raging forest fire on their hands, so they've definitely brought in the water trucks, the planes with the dust that comes out of them, everything they can do to try to knock this thing down. Now, last two things I'll leave you with. So we talk, obviously, a lot about our national debt, taxes, where taxes are likely to go. We dedicated entire podcast, 2025, The Final Drive, what you need to know to win, to this topic. But I found this alarming. So the annual interest cost on the U.S. national debt is forecasted to be just under $400 billion for this current 2022 fiscal year. Then rising up to $1.19 trillion with a T 10 years down the road. So you can imagine if you're accumulating another, you know, $400 billion, and it's going up to almost $1.2 trillion in a decade, and all of it in between, it's going to get nasty and ugly out there. How much was the cost on our national debt back 10 years ago? $220 billion. So it's basically almost doubled to this point, looking to more like triple in the next 10 years. And folks are like, when does this stop? How does this ever get under control? And I'm like, whenever folks quit buying our debt. But what the chink in the armor is to say, the U.S. itself, since the 2008 crisis, has been the number one buyer of its own debt. We currently own $5.2 trillion of our own treasury debt, whereas China and Japan together own about $2.3. And I don't think they're buying a ton more right now, but you know what? At this point, people are still generally buying, and when the Fed stops buying, that's when it gets interesting. So we'll see how this all works out, and hopefully it's not in some big crises down the road, but it certainly is something noteworthy to keep an eye on and understand what you can do now, personally and your family, to simply try to get out of the crosshairs of higher taxes down the road, because we are sitting at $30.42 trillion of debt. It's forecasted in 10 years to be $45 trillion. The national debt, again, was $16 trillion 10 years ago. So they forecasted 10 years ago that our debt would be around $20 trillion. Well, it was $30. Now they're forecasting it would be $45 trillion. Well, probably going to be $50 or more. Just the way the math always works with the Congressional Budget Office. They try, but a lot of things happen between today and 10 years that will cause that number to be worse than they report today. So on that good news, let's take a quick break. We'll get Hot Rod back. Of course, that news of the week was brought to you by the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group at 812-323-8300. And Kenny Bland Auctions, they are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning the sale of your estate or real estate. So go visit them online and check out their latest auction at KennyBlandAuctions.com. We'll be right back with Rod Holloway. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Happy 4th of July, Independence Day. Of course, everyone will be closed, including the markets, for a breather on Monday as we celebrate the 4th of July. And then we'll get back at it for quarter number three. Believe it or not, it's here. It's in our face. And joining me now, a frustrated Rod Holloway, as we've been trying to figure out where this thing's going and where we're headed, Rod. And it's been a challenging thing to figure out. And I know you and I talk about this every day, not just occasionally and on this show, but every single day. So where are we sitting today as we wrap up the end of the second quarter and heading into Q3?
Yeah, well, as you said, frustrating is a good word for it, because you know, nothing that has been typical within the market in the past has played out at all this year. You know, obviously the beginning of the year is typically a normally strong time. It most certainly wasn't in January and February. We did have a nice bounce back in March, but it's been nothing but down since then. And part of what I've continued to talk about is just the lack of ability to gain any sort of traction on our up days or even the few up weeks we've had. We don't follow through with it next week. And then, as I told you this morning, you know, what's a little frustrating this week is you get a positive week last week, so you kind of hope coming into this week that maybe you'll actually string two positive weeks together. And especially when you look at the circumstances of end of month, end of quarter, in which a lot of the institutional money managers do their window dressing. They buy. So for two reasons. One, they'd like to prop the market up. Many of their bonuses and things like that are tied to where they're at in performance and in comparison to the benchmark. They also want to show that they have held stocks that maybe have performed better and didn't hold some of the stocks that dramatically underperformed. But even in that scenario, we can't get a follow-through week this week, in which so far on Thursday, we are down for the week. We are still down for the day. We have recovered and come back a fair amount off of our losses, but we are still down. So the seasonality trend hasn't worked. The oversold because you're so far below certain moving averages, or consecutive days of sell-offs or consecutive weeks of sell-off. Pretty much all of those analogies that we have heard many different analysts throw out there at us that signaled potentially you had a rally, even if it was going to be a very short rally and a temporary rally, just for the most part have not played out this year.
Yeah, it's been tough. I was looking at, we talked about this a few weeks back, that, you know, even though it's been rough this year, if you widen your lens, it puts things in perspective. I did this report during News of the Week, but after the S&P has suffered two bear markets, which is defined, as we well know, as a decline of 20% or more since the beginning of the pandemic just 30 months ago, the S&P's actually gained 20.4% from the close of trading on the 19th of February back in 2020 to last Friday, 8 days after the second, quote, bear market bottom, if it is the bottom. So, Rod, when you put it in perspective, these things happen. They're always different. Everyone always says, oh, this time it's different. It is always a little different, but it does tend to rhyme a little bit. So here we sit going into, you know, the third quarter now. The Fed is super important here, what they say. In fact, you and I talked about this, that really 90% of the power of the Fed is in their words, only about 10% of what they actually do. And the Fed is going to be talking a lot, and we're hoping they change their tune slightly, as we're already seeing consumer demand in a lot of areas decline. And I'm feeling it, I'm seeing it, and I don't know if the Fed's going to react the same way. And then I'm going to give you some stats, Rod, about the last time we were in this predicament way back in 1979 and 1980. So there should be a song, right, written about, it's all about the Fed, about the Fed, about the Fed. I think there is a song that's similar to that, but that's what it's about right now.
Yeah, most certainly is. And I think to the point you're making, Dave, is that the data that they are probably looking at is not yet currently reflecting some of the near-term conditions that we are beginning to see. So you're starting to hear about layoffs. They're relatively small. They're not widespread and sweeping over multiple sectors. They're not extremely large. In many circumstances, they are very specific. So Tesla, as an example, a few weeks back, it said they were going to cut down on their white-collar workforce a little bit and have some layoffs there. Then more recently, this week, end of last week, they said there was going to be some layoffs within the autonomous driving division. So this isn't Tesla as a whole, but you're starting to see that in other sectors, other industries that are having these conversations that we're going to be letting maybe some of our temporary workers go, or we're going to have areas from this specific division are going to be let go. So it's not massive layoffs. Matter of fact, this week's jobless claims number came in a little bit lower than expected. So right now, the broad economic data is continuing to show that there is strength and there isn't weakness. But we are most certainly beginning to see some cracks in the dam, and that's where our concern comes in, is that, you know, once you begin to get that crack and the water begins to leak through, it normally starts to make that crack slightly bigger. And then as you and I were having our conversation this morning, as I alluded to it, while I think that the dam is going to give way at some point, what we don't yet know is what dam are we dealing with? Is it the dam at Lake Lemon, which is only damming up a small amount of water, or are we talking about the Hoover Dam, which is damming up a whole lot of water, and when it busts through? So what I'm saying with that is it going to be a shallow recession, or is it going to be a deep recession? I, at this point, don't necessarily see how we don't avoid a technical recession, which is just two consecutive negative GDP prints on that. It may not be deep, it may not be widespread, but at the same time, in you and I's conversation, the other thing we talked about, there are individual people who would tell you that they are individually in their own recession, even if the economy is not.
Yeah, you have people questioning purchasing something, doing something, going somewhere, even if their job feels and appears to be stable. So that's more that mental recession. And just like in previous recessions, which, you know, I've been sitting here through a few with you, everyone, we've talked about you can either mentally participate in things or choose not to. Now, it doesn't mean your pocketbook's not going to feel one way or another, but just like during the pandemic, you know, the mindset of people was so important. And I just kept preaching to the fact that, listen, mindset, will set, skill set. And you know, folks, that's stuff that can't be taken away from me once you have it. Right back in the inflationary days of 1979, I was 9 years old. I think you were 10. In 1980, inflation was up 13.3 and then backed up in 1980 by another 12.5. But here's what's crazy. The Fed's fund rate was 8.5% at the beginning of that. Yeah. They increased it to 20% over just 6 months, trying to bring inflation under control. Now, where are we today? Inflation was 7% for 2021. Fed's fund rate is 1.75% after three rate hikes we've seen in 2022. So when you think about, we've been there before, thank God we're not there, right?
Yeah, and hopefully we don't get there, which I've heard some people, you know, mathematically, the math guys behind the market and the number will tell you that the Fed funds rate should be much closer to the inflation rate. Now, I hope we don't get up to a 7 or 8% print, or if you look at the inflation one, the purchasing expenditure inflation index is what I think the Fed puts more weight in versus the CPI, and it's been trending in the mid to low sixes versus the mid to low eights that we see on the CPI side of things. But once again, even in that index that they're looking at inflation, it strips out food and energy, and that's the one component that there isn't anybody in the economy that can avoid those two sectors.
Rod, thanks, as always, for being on the program. I know I'll see you back at the office today and tomorrow, because as we record this show early today. And we'll see you on 4th of July. We'll see you Sunday at 4th of July as we let off our big firework bang. And I guess right now, folks, that's what you got to focus on, our independence, our freedom, the fact that we still have all kinds of wonderful privileges and rights to be in this country. And I just think if everyone will take a step back and look at the positive that we have in the world and not focus totally on the negatives, that it would be a much happier place for all of us. And just watch Meat Eaters instead of CNN or Fox, right? That's what I do. Last night I watched Meat Eaters on Netflix. My wife's like, haven't you seen that episode? I go, yeah, but I love this when he catches a great big trout. And I'm like, whatever. So it's a fun time. So, Rod, thanks as always. I'll talk to you in a bit.
You bet, Dave. Have a great show.
All right, we're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, I've got lots to talk about, but let's go back and talk about what's been going on in the podcast, because if you haven't become a listener, we want you to become a listener over at 2025 The Final Drive. This past episode, I did it on how you can get money out of a retirement account without a tax penalty before the age of 59, but really that gives me just a chance to kind of reflect on many of the past highlights and headlines of the podcast. We now are on number 22, and we'll have number 23 come out on the 11th of July, since we're not going to have a podcast come out on 4th of July. Give you all a break there. And yeah, we'll just see how things are going. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes as we lead into the 4th of July weekend. So hope everyone has some wonderful plans and the weather holds off to be decent. Man, if we could have dialed up this weather we've had all week over the 4th of July weekend, that's money in the bank right there. All right, so if you have not become a listener of 2025, The Final Drive, I want you to stop right now, pull your phone out, go to wherever you get your podcast. For me, it's iTunes. And go subscribe, and then make your alerts happen so when the new one comes up, you can listen. And they're not long. It's not like this radio show that takes, you know, an hour to listen to, or depends if you're listening in podcast form or not, maybe a little less. It takes like, you know, 10 minutes or so, 15 minutes. I mean, my longest one was 20 minutes, I think. But most of them are fairly short, very to the point. And this past one I did was on how to get money out of retirement accounts without a penalty if you're under the age of 59 and a half, because everyone thinks, oh, I can't get money out taxed without paying a penalty unless I'm that old. Well, there's a couple of different ways to do it. So I get into what's called IRS code 72T on how you can access it through what's called substantial equal payments. And there's a few different methods to do that. And you take it out for at least 5 years or until you're 59 and a half, whichever is longer. And you can get it out. You could do one at age 30 if you want to. But that's a long time to have substantial equal payments. Because I mentioned this in the podcast, that if you screw it up, let's say you don't take it, you take too much, you move money in and out of the account, then that's really a violation of 72T rules. And then not only is that distribution penalized at 10%, but every distribution that you took out is penalized. So I go to get into why I would try to avoid 72T if possible. I mean, not always can you avoid that. Then I get into the rule of 55 that says if you terminate in the year you turn 55, then you can take money out of your 401Ks and 403Bs and 457s and all that kind of stuff without a penalty. If you rolled into an IRA, then you're subject to the 59 and a half or getting back to 72Ts. So sometimes it makes sense to roll money into your 401k, not out of your 401k. It's going to be a lot more to talk about with that in the second part of the year, because we have some new regulations in our industry, in our world, through the Department of Labor, that really makes it tough to just willy-nilly move money out of a 401k or even from one IRA to another IRA. There's a lot of documentation, a lot of information you'll be provided as a consumer. You know, is it good or bad? I don't know. It's just like everything else. You stick it in with really good, good intentions, and then we'll figure out what the unintended consequences are down the road. Like one of the reasons that I'm sort of on the fence about it, it's on the surface, if you read it, you're like, oh yes, this is really good for consumers to protect them from, you know, people giving them bad advice. What's the difference between advice and education? That's a thin line that's not directly addressed. Is it such a hassle to deal with these new rules that smaller accounts won't even be addressed? People are like, nope, I'm not going to mess with that $50,000 account. It's not worth it. I'm going to only do it for bigger accounts. That could unintentionally underserve a big part of our community. You know, so I'm looking forward to being able to learn more and talk to you more about that. And if you're in the midst of doing a rollover, what are things you should be watching out for? But I get into a lot of things like that. And then I also get into in the early distributions that don't forget about Roth. Because if I put money into a Roth, even if I'm 30 years old, I can take the contribution out, no problem. There's no rules that prevent me from doing that. So once again, another win for the Roth. It's just the gains that are where you have to worry about the age 59 and a half rule or the five-year rule when it comes to Roth distributions, because there is an ordering rule on how money comes out of a Roth. Contributions come out first. So if I've been making contributions for 10 years, I can take all my contributions out. Even at age 50, 55, you know, that could be part of my income. It's tax-free, no penalty. Then maybe I did some conversions. They come out next, right? I can take those out. And not until I get into the gains do I have to worry about having held it for 5 years or any kind of 59 and a half. So I get into that. I get into if you own company stock, your company stock in your 401k plan, how you can get that out in a very, very tax-favored way and possibly never pay any tax on the gain if you do it right. So that was podcast number 22. Rod and I are did number 23, which won't be out until the 11th of July. And you're going to like it because it's really about how to increase your cash flow, your gains, how to have your money, make more money, all within a Roth. So I'm not going to get into a bunch of that right now. I went back and talked about in podcast 21, just tax-deferred incomes, Social Security, Medicare, all of that. I went in another episode and talked about, you know, just how we do budgets in our country, how we pull forward expenses occasionally, push out income, and why age 75 for RMDs is on the table. Like, why? Because we need your money now. It's very, very interesting math to say, well, interesting, huh? The peak of the baby boomers, born 1957 to 61, we have about 30 to 40 trillion sitting in tax deferred, waiting to be tapped, retirement accounts. The person born in 57, that the first year, well, what year will they be 75 when they have to start taking it out? And then it's just more money and more money and more money, because that's they're actually smarter than you give them credit for occasionally. So we get through that. We obviously talk about the national debt a lot, just building the narrative that, you know, tax rates are higher in the future than they are today. I mean, just go on and on and on. How to get the biggest and best stepped up cost basis when you pass away. Even if you're married, how do you handle joint assets and moving those things around? Very intriguing stuff that no one talks about. I get into taxable, tax-free, tax-deferred accounts. Auto enrollment should be to the Roth, not to the traditional side. So just a ton of stuff. And gosh, that just gets you through maybe four of them. And there's just 23 of these guys out there. So yeah, take some time, you know, while you're messing around, listen to it in your car, and then give me some feedback. I love questions, man. That's what drives everything. I love when people send me articles or point out something that I said that wasn't right, which that never happens, right? No. No, it does happen. Sometimes I'll say it wrong, or it's in my head one way, comes out another way. So yeah, I mean, call me out if you're like, oh, David, that's not the way it is. Or we can have a dialogue about it. I just enjoy interacting with people, especially when it comes to this kind of stuff. All right, so I want to get into this next. Someone sent me an article that's a regular listener of the show, and it was a Wall Street Journal. I had read it already. It was a Wall Street Journal article. It's been my strategy forever on Roth conversions. So the title was catchy, Fight the Bear Market Blues with a Roth IRA Conversion, from Laura Saunders from the Wall Street Journal. She's a great writer. We'll be back. I'm going to talk to you about that article, and it's like preaching to the choir, I know, but it's interesting nonetheless to discuss it. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Yeah, this article, I actually had it last week for last week's show. I might have even mentioned it briefly, but it's a carry forward. But it's so good. I talk about this in my book, 2025, The Final Drive. When's the best time to do a Roth conversion? Well, there's two things to think about. One, where are we in the market cycle? If the market's down 10% or more, then do it then. Well, we were down 20, right? Do it then. Well, why? Well, if I can push assets over into a Roth that are 20% down, when they recover, and they will, it's all tax-free. We've been doing this for years. In fact, 2020 was probably the flagship year. We tried so hard to push as many Roth conversions through in that March and April time period, and then by the time you get to the end of the summer, you had all of this massive gain inside of a Roth, and we're just high-fiving each other, you know, laughing at the fact that we took advantage of the system. It was so easy, like taking candy from a baby, like stealing the sucker thrown at the parade from the guy next to you. I mean, this is good stuff. So the article starts off with, attention retirement savers, don't get spooked by the bear market and forget about doing a Roth conversion. With prices down, the upside could be terrific. And then also gets into, which I would highly suggest, on the other hand, don't rush into it willy-nilly, because it may not be appropriate or might catch you off guard in some other area. So Natalie Choate, I've known Natalie for, well, ever since I met Ed Slott many, many years ago. She is by far one of the long-standing specialists in retirement accounts, and she's done several conversions for herself. So just like Ed, he drinks the Kool-Aid himself. He doesn't just, you know, spread it all out to everyone else. But she said a Roth IRA is the best retirement plan to own. The big question is how much you have to pay to get it. And she's talking about taxes. And then they go into the reason to consider a conversion in a bear market is when the value of the assets like stocks and funds fall, the taxes on the conversion to the Roth IRA often drops as well, or gives you the ability to push more shares into a Roth conversion, and then they grow and the withdrawals are all tax-free. They also pointed out that a growing number, and this warmed my heart, a growing number of taxpayers have opted for Roth IRA conversions in the recent years. Taxpayers reported almost 900,000 Roth conversions in 2019, totaling $17 billion. That's twice the level we saw in 2014 when they did about $8 billion. And then also, this is interesting, I have a theory on this too. Conversions have been especially popular with higher incoming individuals that make $200,000 to $500,000. Now, why would you be more interested if you have a higher tax bracket? Because you understand taxes. You're getting whipped every paycheck, and you're like, I'm tired of getting whipped. I don't want to get whipped later, so I'm just going to bite the bullet and pay the tax now, whatever this rate is, and then let it all grow tax-free, right? And then take it out all tax-free. So it's really a good article if you get a chance to look it up. It does talk about the difference between tax rate at conversion when you convert it versus the tax rate at withdrawal. If you believe that your federal income tax and state income, don't forget about state, will be lower than it is today, then that's something to consider, right? I certainly don't believe that, especially when the Congressional and Budget Office year after year after year says, here's where tax rates have to be, right? Just to pay for the stuff that we already know we have to pay for. And we continually ignore where those taxes have to go. And the longer we wait to get more revenue, some way, shape, or form, I did a podcast on that. How can we get more revenue, tax revenue, without increasing tax rates? That's a possibility. You know, how's that work? Well, I don't know. But I just know right now exactly what your tax rates are. I know what category of tax rate I'm in, which tax bracket I'm in, and it's my choice if I want to pay that tax off at 12, 22, 24, even 37%, don't forget about state as well, and be done with it. And don't forget, if you convert 100 grand, you want to try to pay that tax with outside money, and that's also in the plan. But I have podcasts that cover all this stuff, so just flip through. Usually the title is pretty descriptive of what we're going to be talking about in that particular podcast. So yeah, to check it out. And then also, you know, if your spouse passes away, you get one more opportunity to file a joint return. Because I've talked to I'm blue in the face about this, right? That if a person dies or when they die, then a few things happen and they're all bad. One, you're going to lose a check. Like at least one Social Security check goes away, maybe a pension or part of a pension. And your taxes double. Everything you know as married filing joint gets cut in half. So at the time where you lose money, so you know I need more money to live, I have to go back to my retirement account where it's never been taxed, pull it out at a double tax rate from where it was the year before. So using that last opportunity to do a married filing joint and do a massive Roth conversion in that year, that's usually a pretty decent strategy. But like I said, it's a good article, and the title caught my eye, and thank you, Stu, for sending it. I appreciate that. Fight the Bear Market Blues with a Roth IRA Conversion. Like I said, I read it. I actually had it cut out on my desk in my pile of stuff that seems to never go away, just keeps getting bigger and bigger. But whenever it was emailed to me as, hey, this is interesting, this is that, I'm like, well, if they think it is, then let's bring it up on the show because you know, you probably will think it's interesting as well. Just a different way to think of it. All right, let's take another break. When we come back, when does it make sense to take a 401k loan and when does it not? We'll have a few minutes to talk about that. And then later, we'll end up with, last week we talked about the importance of healthcare representatives and POAs. Thank you for the feedback about that topic last week in the inquiries. That always makes me feel good. It's like, yeah, people are actually listening. People actually are going to cfci.us and contacting us with a question. Guess what? It actually gets forwarded to me. Yes, me. And guess who answers it? Yes, me. So I appreciate all the feedback as always. We're going to take a quick one. We'll be back at Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Sure, my name with David Hayes on this Independence Lead Up show. We appreciate you listening as always. We will be here on whatever 7th, I think, of next week to do a show. Jeffrey Levine will be my guest. Very excited about having Jeff on. We'll talk more about him later if we have time. So, this has come up a lot recently, and that's why I wanted to bring it up to you. Many of you have a 401k, and you have something called a loan privilege. Most plans have a loan privilege. Not all, but most do. What does that mean? It means you can go in and borrow against your 401k. So the way it works, you can borrow up to $50,000 or half of your account value, right? That's the maximum. So if you have $100,000 in your account, you can go borrow $50,000. The general purpose loans work like this. Number one, the loan is tax-free, so you're basically borrowing out of your 401k. It's tax-free. Then through payroll deduction, or if you don't work there any longer, you can pay it like you would any other loan. You would make payments back. Now, the interest rate's determined by this goofy rule. It's called 120% of the midterm capital rate, but that doesn't matter. Every plan has their own rate, and you pay yourself back. So it's almost like, okay, I'm now taking half of my money, and I'm investing in myself and my ability to pay that back over 5 years. Saying you most of the plans you can model online, and then if you're using it to buy a house, if your plan allows it, you could pay it back over like 20 years. So it's really a neat way to get money out if you're doing the right thing with it. Buying a house, good idea. Trying to avoid tax, good idea. Trying to not borrow from the bank and borrow from yourself, good idea. If you're buying something that makes sense. If I'm simply borrowing money to take a vacation, instead of going down to the credit union asking for a vacation loan, that's a dumb idea. But it is a good idea. And a situation that came up recently that I thought I would bring up is this. A young couple had a windfall that came in the form of an IRA. It was not an inherited IRA. It just something happened within the retirement account that made it quite large. It gave him some options. The wife decided to stay at home with the kids, and he's working a job and does pretty well. But to supplement their need each month, they had started taking money out of the IRA. Well, at their age, not only is it taxed, it's also penalized. Again, going back to how to get money out without a penalty. So in this case, I'm like, well, this is going to be a need we know we're going to have for probably at least 5 years. So why don't we do this? Let's roll back into your 401k, right? You don't hear this very often. Roll back into the 401k to get your balance up to $100,000 because he had just started this new job. Then we're going to take a loan of $50,000, stop taking distributions from the IRA. Too young to do 72 Ts, too long to it's just too long. When you're 40 years old, you don't want to be wrapped up for 20 years in a 72 T payment. So we're like, okay, let's just take care of what we know. We know for the next 5 years, you know for sure you're thinking about staying at home, so let's take the money out tax-free, and we will then send you monthly what that net was from the IRA before. We will also send you the extra dollars with the decrease in pay, which was going to be like $400 a pay. And this should then run for close to, 4 to 5 years. It's going to be really close. And then we'll just decide again, like where to go from there. So it was a valid reason to put money into a 401k and, oh, by the way, pull it out tax-free. Oh, and by the way, not have a 10% tax penalty on every single distribution. So thankfully, this young couple contacted us through an introduction. We were able to stop the bleeding with the tax penalties. We can't really fix it what happened in the past, but we can certainly fix it going forward. So that's a good reason right there, right? So it's available. Many people don't even think about it, but I always say go where the money is the cheapest, right? So if someone says, I want to build a garage and I want to take $80,000 to net $50,000 to build that garage out of my 401k, I'm like, this happened last year. I'm like, well, when are you going to retire? He said, about 3 to 4 years from now. Okay, let's get your $50,000 out of your 401k. Let's go build your barn or your garage. Pay yourself back in 3 years when you retire. You'd basically at that time have a choice. I can keep paying on it. I can, quote, default on it, which just means I'm not going to pay it back, and I get taxed on it at that time. and you'll be over 59 and a half and not have a penalty. So that's why this stuff is kind of complicated, right? And that's why I'm always like, hey, it may seem super easy on the surface, but there's a lot of things to consider and think about before just willy-nilly doing anything when it comes to retirement accounts. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back. Robbie's getting a little generous with the music, but I got a lot to talk about with only a few minutes to go. All right, so once again, thank you for the feedback about my topic last week on healthcare representatives and POAs. Very, very important. I want you to know the thing that they reached out to me about was that they never thought about putting a power of attorney and a healthcare representative in place for their young adult children. They're like, I never even thought about it. Because, you know, you have a 20-year-old, a 21-year-old, whatever, 19-year-old, and you still think, well, they're totally still dependent on me, right? So if something happens, I can surely act on their behalf. Well, it's a heck of a lot easier if you have a power of attorney to take care of financial things, a healthcare rep so that you can avoid all of the HIPAA stuff. And they're like, so thank you for that feedback because, again, this is an aha thing for most people. All right, and then lastly, Jeff Levine will be my guest. In fact, I need to text Jeff as soon as I get off the radio to make sure. I think we're recording sometime next week for it to be played on the Thursday night broadcast. So if you have a chance and you're very interested at all, look him up. He's really, in my opinion, kind of the heir apparent in this country to Ed Slott. He worked with Ed Slott and Company for years. His mother is actually a partner with Ed Slott and Company. He and Ed are starting a podcast together to basically argue different points back and forth. Like you take the opinion that a Roth conversion is good, I take it that it's bad. And then you can hear them argue about that to get some perspective rather than just always hear one voice of, yes, do it for this reason and not really having that counter argument going on. So it's going to be great having Jeffrey on. Like I said, I've known Jeff since he was in his 20s. And then to be able to see him on CNBC, be as a guest, seeing him on the stage in front of thousands of people. So I don't know exactly what we're going to all talk about yet with Jeff. There's so much we can. I'm going to get on his website and kind of look at some of his blogs and posts and probably take that route. But it'll certainly be great and entertaining. Reached out to Mary Beth Franklin, of course, former Kiplinger Magazine senior editor and also now contributing editor of Investment News. She's still out doing great. She's also going to join us on the program in the second half of the year. Ed Slott will be back. We'll have some local attorneys on, CPA on. It's going to be fun second half of the year. I'm really excited to have things crank back up like they used to be. So, hey, everyone, I promise you I'll be back. I won't get blown up by my fireworks. Very, very safe. All electronically done. So I'll be back with all 10 digits next week, so I'll be able to do the show. But have a great 4th of July. That's what I wanted to say. Have a great 4th of July. And like I told Rod, let's look at the positives of everything in our country, how free we are and how many privileges we have, and let's focus on that. Enjoy your family, enjoy your friends, enjoy the parade, go to the fair. I'll be at the auction on Saturday morning bidding on livestock, so don't forget about that. That's always fun. So that's about it, guys. I'll leave you alone from there. Again, happy 4th of July. Take care. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.